Are you thinking of becoming an OT entrepreneur? Do you hope to one day maybe open a private practice, start a company, create a nonprofit, or design a product? Or maybe you've started down the entrepreneur path and you're feeling a little stuck. Well, today on the show, Trish Williams joins me as we have an awesome conversation all about occupational therapy and entrepreneurship. Trish shares her journey into becoming an OTpreneur and how that led her into finding her passion, which is coaching other OT entrepreneurs. Trish shares a ton of information and resources in this episode, which will all be linked in the show notes and can be found at otforlife.com/102. That's OT, the number 4, LYFE.com/102. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah Putt. I've been an occupational therapist since 2009, specializing in early intervention and also run my own private practice in this setting. Welcome to OT for Life. Welcome to the show, Trish. How's it going today?
It's great. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
I am pumped to have you on the show today. And we are going to be digging into a topic that I think both you and I can agree that we absolutely love talking about. And that's OT entrepreneurship.
I thought you were going to say Gilmore Girls.
Oh, nope. Not one that I was ever interested in. Bachelorette. There we go.
Okay. Well, okay, then I'll talk about OT entrepreneurship.
I know. Well, we can't spoil anything from what happened last night on The Bachelorette. Nope. So
I haven't spoiled myself. This is the first season I haven't spoiled myself. That's how intuit I am this year. So
you and I, we were on a panel talking about OT entrepreneurship to a bunch of OT students, and you made a comment. And I swear, this comment has just stuck with me from the moment that you said it.
Oh.
And I think it automatically made us like best friends from that moment. You probably don't even know what it is that I'm going to say, but it really has. It resonated so much with me because it's been something that I struggled with when I first started down the path of entrepreneurship. And I also think it's something that so many others also wonder about. So I want to start this episode by asking you, do occupational therapy practitioners need to go to business school to become a successful entrepreneur?
I'm so glad you asked this question. The answer is absolutely not. I grew up with an entrepreneur father. I was also married to a Harvard MBA. And I tell this because I want you to envision me as a 25-year-old new grad in Cambridge, Massachusetts, surrounded by Harvard MBA students, because I got to live in Boston for 2 years while my kid's dad attended school. And that sure did a mindset on me. I was surrounded by incredible people. I will tell you, I found some beautiful, beautiful friends there. I will also tell you, there are more times than not when I would be at a party, at a function, at the gym, at the cafeteria on campus. I was in the school play. I actually rode for the team. I was immersed in the culture. And people would say to me, "So what section are you in? Whose class are you taking this term?" And I would say, "Oh no, my husband is the MBA student and I'm the partner." And often the conversations ended there. The second thing, if I was lucky enough to get another half of a part of the conversation, they would say, "Oh, and what do you do?" And I would say, "Oh, I'm an occupational therapist. I'm working at Spalding Rehab Center right now in the neuro department." And they would say, "Oh, you help people. That is so nice." That was kind of part B if I ever got there. So please remember, I started this by saying so many amazing friends that have come from there. And yet there were 800 students in there. And those friends that I found were in the minority. I was daily pandered to that I wasn't a student at the school and that I wasn't in a quote unquote real profession. And so I want to highlight that because it has taken me many, 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 many years to undo that mindset. I also had a partner who graduated at the time with an investment banking job. And at no point in my career did I ever think that I would ever be able to make that kind of income. And so I put myself in a very kind of niche, and the universe did it for me. The environment did it for me, and I did it for myself by saying, "I'm a sweet white woman, young helper." And then I became a sweet older white mother helper. And I truly felt that I would never be able to grow something of great success. So let me finish your question, Sarah, by saying that yesterday and today, literally the same conversation with two different coaching clients I have, and we'll get into what I do now in a few minutes, I'm sure, but both said the same thing. And it's an experience I see over and over and over again with OT entrepreneurs, particularly those who are in the middle of their grow to scale journey. And they say, I built something amazing through hustle, through sweat, with absolutely no business background. I'm paying people, I've created jobs, I bring money into my family, I have a career that makes impact that I love, but I still don't feel like a real business person. And I'm here to help people change that mindset.
Yeah, that resonates so much with me because I also think I went through that for many, really? Many months and maybe even years once I started my practice of like, am I really a business owner? Because I don't have the letters behind my name. I don't have the formal education, right? I've done a lot of my own research and consultations and all that kind of stuff, but I don't have that formal education. And I think so many people get kind of stuck wherein they want to start something and they're like, oh, but in order to be an entrepreneur or to be successful, I should go get my MBA or I should go get more training or more education in order to be maybe accepted, in order for them to accept themselves as a business owner. And I just remember when you made that comment, I was just like, yes, because I do not have any business background prior to starting my company. I do not have an MBA. And the funny part about this whole thing is that my husband, similarly, also has an MBA. And he has told me, he's like, I learned more about business, helping me build my business.
Wow.
Than he did in his MBA program. I mean, of course, I'm sure he got lots of great information. But when you're like boots on the ground and actually trying to build something, there's a different lens. There's a different kind of aspect to it. So yes, I've had somebody that has that background, but I myself did not have it. So I think it's just one of those maybe hurdles, obstacles, yeah. Things that people allow into their space that just really doesn't need to be there when you're starting to be an entrepreneur or you're even considering to be an entrepreneur.
Well, and there's a tension that exists with a very well-educated population such as OTs. And so many of us have advanced degrees. You know, I live in Canada, so we don't have the push to OTD like the United States does or other places in the world. And I think if that is what we've been taught since the get-go, that you need advanced degrees and training in terms of pieces of paper with qualifications to even enter the profession, then doesn't it make sense to get that next piece of paper? And I think you have to start unraveling from there.
And I think there's so many things, and we'll get into this as we talk today, but there's so many different things that I like that word, like you have to unravel. You have to like get past so many things when you are starting out to become an entrepreneur, because we are trained to be therapists. We're trained to be practitioners. We're trained to help. And there's this other side that you really have to learn and develop in order to become an entrepreneur and then also to be successful in that role as well, that isn't necessarily something that we are taught when we're in OT school, and even kind of fostered early on, at least for me. It wasn't really fostered early on when I was in practice. So would you mind maybe just taking a couple minutes and telling me about the moment that you decided to start your own business?
You bet. I have, there is a famous Canadian marketer. His name is Terry O'Reilly. He has a great podcast and he has called this the fist on the table moment that every business owner, problem solver has, where, you know, you slam your fist down on the table and you say, oh, there's got to be a better way. And so for me, I had taken many, many years off. I was involved in teaching at McMaster University in Hamilton when my children were very, very young. And I still wasn't by any stretch of the imagination in a full-time position there. I think I taught a course for one term for each year that my children were little. And then when I had my daughter, I had pregnancy complications. I was on bed rest. I had to leave that McMaster. I mean, I actually left McMaster to go to the hospital.
Oh my gosh.
To talk about an abrupt ending where the doctor calls, they're like, you kind of have to leave right now. And I remember, oh, if anybody, this is a funny story. So many of us are familiar with Mary Law, the OT extraordinaire. And she was my boss at McMaster for that clinical round. I had to actually go into Mary Law's office, who, even though we were quote unquote colleagues together, we weren't. She's God and I am not. And I remember being like, I'm really sorry, Mary. I have to leave like right now. Left the class to say, Mary, do you think you could please go in and take over my class? And so I leave like in this drama kerfuffle because the doctors called and said, like, you need to go to the hospital right now. So Mary Law comes in and takes over. And I've always felt like that had such a funny dramaticness to it. And as well, literally asking like one of the OT goddesses of the world to like take over my little class.
Talk about a humbling experience there.
I know, really. And then my students were like, where did Trish go? And why is Mary Law standing in front of us? Right. At any rate, so that was 2004. And then I didn't go back to do any type of OT work at all until around 2012. So I was off for a very long time. I did, you know, some admissions committee work with McMaster. There might have been another quick tutorial class in there. I don't really remember, but I do know that I was committed to staying home with my children and I had made that decision myself. And I moved from Toronto, Ontario to Calgary, Alberta. I didn't even have an OT license. And the telephone rang and it was the University of Alberta and they wanted to open a campus in Calgary where I live, which is about 2 hours south. So they asked me, based on my McMaster experience, if I would help them start this. And I remember it vividly. I was in the kitchen icing a cake for my daughter's birthday. Pink frosting, like pink, we call it icing in Canada, but frosting all over. And I truly, and it was like the associate dean. And I remember thinking, how on earth did they get my phone number? And what a funny image this is. And I had to say to them, I don't even have an OT license. Like I haven't worked in a long time. And they had such a high value on McMaster education because I was a student there and had been on the teaching team that they really wanted that. So I said yes to that. And that's the catalyst that kept me saying yes for quite a few years. Fast forward to another year or two, and I'm a single parent, and I decided to also take a clinical job. And it was through those two pieces of saying yes, one very non-traditional, setting up a new faculty, and through getting back into a clinical job after having been away for a really long time, that kind of hybrid made me realize that that clinical job wasn't really for me. Happily, I was in pediatrics for that job, and I had been a parent for so long that I felt as though I didn't really miss that much time because I had the ability to really see kids. I had been watching kids by that time for 12 years. And my past experience in pediatrics really culminated in this moment of me being one foot in the traditional clinical world and one foot in the non-traditional university world to say, I don't think this is for me. I think there are new ways of doing things. And I was also significantly older than everybody else at the clinical facility. I was older than all the bosses. And I was humble enough to spend a lot of my time watching. So at the end of that year, when my contract was up, I went to my bosses there and I said, listen, I'm really surprised that there isn't the private practice place that I want to refer to. And I said, I think I can do this. If I mess up and it doesn't work, can I come back? And they said, absolutely. And in fact, here's a whole bunch of referrals.
Oh my goodness.
Right? So I actually literally just found a room in a building and I started that, I think in November, it's all a blur, November, like 2013, I think. And then by March, I had a full caseload.
Jeez. I actually didn't know this story from you. And it is amazing to me how many parallels there actually are between your story outside of the teaching part. I wasn't doing the teaching part, but your story and my story.
Really?
Yeah, because I also started in the traditional sense, but then I started independent contracting. So I was getting exposed to kind of that quote unquote non-traditional where I was kind of doing my own thing, but also still had that traditional link because I was still working for other companies and I still had my full-time job and all that kind of stuff. And I had that same kind of like aha moment of like, well, I can do this. And if I fail, I can just go back and do exactly what I'm doing right at this moment.
What's the worst that can happen?
Exactly. And when you said that the company that you were working for even like gave you the referrals, that same thing happened to me. My wow. very first boss, who was my first like full-time job, when I told her I wanted to start, she's like, I have more kids than I know what to do with. So why don't you see them under me? And then as soon as you are like your company is like off the ground and you get all your paperwork, she's like, yeah, we'll just sign them all over to you.
Amazing.
And that, yeah, I'm just like, what? That's so cool that we both kind of had such a similar experience. And I'm curious kind of your take on it. I feel like for me, that was pivotal in giving me that feeling that I could do it and that I had kind of people in my corner. And I also kind of had that safety net of like, if I truly mess up, I can go back and get another job.
I honestly have met very few to almost no OTs that do a lousy job. I mean, I really haven't. In the course of my 26 years of being an OT, there are a handful that stand out. I don't think customer service and quality management is our problem as a group. So I think if you just show up at work every day and you try your best, and then you ask your bosses for permission to try something new, I think the majority of people are going to get a heck yes and come back if you need it. I think where I was different is that I felt like a fish out of water because I was so much older. So I think the fish out of water feeling was alienating and also was kind of the impulse too, because I didn't fit. Like I'm 42, I was divorced, I was a single parent taking care of my kids full time at that point. I mean, I needed to make a lot of money. I didn't have a partner to rely on, and I had been in and out of the profession already. And I was a parent, especially when you're talking about pediatrics. So I really felt as though I was already a fish out of water. So why not kind of continue that? So I think for me, there was the only difference between you and I is that age thing propelled me to just be like, meh, might as well try it, right? You know, Melissa LaPointe has started a podcast, which just came out today. I'm so excited to listen to it. And she has a group called OTs Gone Rogue. And I think there are so many of us. You don't have to have my story. There are so many of us. And the theme that I do here for you and me, and again, so many people that I coach, is like, I feel like an OT, but I don't feel like that traditional OT. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I fit into the proper OT box for whatever reason, whether you have bigger dreams or you want to make more money or you don't, how can you possibly be, you know, have a productivity level of seeing 37 kids a week, like, you know, but we want to drink from the well and we don't want to make waves in that well. And I think everybody that has started out as an OT entrepreneur has to have some kind of tension between being a sheep in the flock quite happily, but also feeling like, where are my other sheep?
So you know what? I'm going to call you out a little bit because you've said the whole age thing.
Yeah.
And I feel very similarly, but on the opposite end. So when I started my company, I was 4 or 5 years out of school. And I felt like I was on the young end and people were going to look at me and be like, you can't be a business owner. You're not even old enough. And I didn't have kids. And so here I am trying to start a pediatric early intervention private practice, not having kids. I look really young. People think they think I'm still in high school sometimes. So it still revolves around that whole age piece, but just kind of a very similar kind of aspect. But like we had different parts of it that really kind of fueled us on our journey. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to just put myself out there because people aren't going to believe in me anyway. So if I don't do it, I really need to show them that I can do it.
So they're the stories we tell ourselves.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, got it. I'm happy to be called out.
Yeah. So honestly here, in all transparency, Trish, how much did you know about business before you started or while you were like in the very, very beginning stages?
Absolutely nothing. And by nothing, I mean, again, like you have to remember, I felt like I knew less than nothing because I had been surrounded by shockingly bright Harvard Business School graduates and a former husband who was an investment banker. Like we would get boondoggled from Toronto to weekends in San Francisco, like Wolves of Wall Street kind of stuff, right? And I didn't even know where to go. Like I had no idea. I remember like looking up an accounting book at the library and putting it down and thinking like, I'm going to fail. How am I ever going to learn this when I got C's in math? And the really interesting thing is, turns out that that's the way that so many businesses start. There is a beautiful book out there called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And I mean, I had found him a little bit further along the journey, but it was a big aha moment, as you said, in that I don't remember the statistic, but I think it's like 75%. I think it's maybe a little less of small business owners are what he calls technicians and what we would call clinicians. So the person that has a skill, like the pie baker or the guy that can fix your car or the therapist. And that's the majority of small business owners. That brings me some comfort. But in that moment, I had none of that. And I remember being intimidated by even going to the free stuff at the bank. But even then, I was just like, I don't fit in here and I've got a mountain. What wound up happening happily was I was so busy that I just figured it out one little step at a time. Like I truly remember the first person saying to me, okay, so can I get an invoice for that? And I was like, oh, And like, literally, can you picture my two index fingers? Like after they left, I was like, oh yes, of course, I will email it to you later. And then close the office door. And I was like, dunk, dunk, dunk. Like, I didn't even think about using a Google template. I was like, Word document, like, dunk, 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 like typing, right? I knew nothing.
So in that same vein, how did you overcome that I don't know anything? And how did you learn the necessary things that you need to learn in order to run a business?
I believe that I am very similar to so many of the OTs that I coach in that I just put my head down and figured it out one step at a time to build a clinic. And I figured a clinician surely could build a clinic. And so I did. I made very strong clinical decisions and I made baby step business decisions like a budget and if I was going to like accept checks or credit cards or how to like do an invoice or do I put things in a cloud or on my hard drive or did I need a marketing plan? And a lot of those things I didn't need because the work really came quickly. So I was too busy to worry about not having the skills. And so typically I would like build the clinical business and do the clinical pieces through the day and then sit down and then work again from like 7 to 10 on the businessy stuff. And it was very reactionary. There was no planning. It was like, oh, case in point, I need to find out how to write an invoice. Well, I don't want to go to the bank every day with these checks. Is there something online? And at that point, back in 2000 and what have I said? 12, 13, it's all a blur. I can never remember. There weren't Facebook groups for this. There weren't OT podcasts for this. I don't even think there were podcasts back then. Like I didn't spend a ton of time on Instagram or Facebook. Like it just didn't exist. So I was truly, literally in a hole. And I just kind of carved away at it. The big kind of realization for me when I truly realized I was running a business and I needed to level up was probably about 3 or 4 years in when two things happened. And the first is that I got really sick with the flu and was out for a solid month. And the place held its own, but it reminded me that it was very much still a Trish show. And the second thing that happened right around that time is we got our first inquiry for acquisition as a company, as a business. And I didn't even know what that meant. So I like actually Googled and called my brother and I was like, oh, so what do I need? Like, what makes us attractive? And one of the things is if the CEO can step away. And again, I couldn't. It was literally the Trish show. So those two things really propelled me to solve the next problem of how do I grow this without me being in the center of it? But until like 3 or 4 years in, that never, ever occurred to me. I just kept solving problems little by little.
That really kind of resonates with me. And I'm sure that resonates with a lot of other people where when they initially kind of start out, they just think like that I'm just going to be my own boss. I'm going to start my own thing. I'm going to pave my own way. And it's going to be me, right? They kind of go into it with that either sole proprietor, or just kind of that solo show. And there is this big transition that can happen when an entrepreneur decides to embark on the path of growing from a solo practice to a group practice or, you know, a much bigger practice. And it really kind of comes back to that concept of working in your business versus mm-hmm. working on your business. And I know for the first many, many years of my company, I was working in my business. I was doing exactly what you were doing. I was seeing clients during the day. I had my clinical hat on during the day. And in the early mornings and the late evenings and on the weekends, that's when the business hat would come on. And I would chip away at learning all these other things that we have to learn in order to be an entrepreneur and in order to kind of run a practice or a company. And it's such an interesting transition when you go from realizing, well, it sounds like you are kind of forced to take a step back because you ended up getting sick, which mm-hmm. potentially maybe that was kind of a blessing in disguise. Where
oh, 100%.
Where it almost like made you realize like, I'm too much a part of this. And I need to take a step back and be like, okay, what systems, what types of things can I put in place? So if I do get sick again, or if I want to go on vacation, or whatever the reason is that you would not be boots on the ground in your business every single day, that you would be able to do that. What do you think, kind of going through that time period, what was the hardest part for you to kind of get over that hurdle?
Honestly, I didn't find it that hard. I think I'm very lucky that occurred in the spring. And by the summer, I was taking at that point almost a month and a half off every summer. And I was on my dock with the stack of books I always bring with me everywhere I go. And, you know, by then the cottage had Wi-Fi and there were like resources out there. And I'd finally found a path. Like I had found one or two Facebook groups. I had found a few podcasts. I had found some books at the Huntsville Library for those in Ontario up in Muskoka, because I was now Googling like really specific problems. Like, how do I prepare my company for acquisition? How can I be the CEO and not see clients? And so those kinds of things that I would put in Google Docs or in the computer at the library started to pop up things to do with that. And once you kind of get like a few key resources, like the Michael Gerber book or Built to Sell book or Jim Collins' Good to Great, like once you start getting some of those resources, then you just start looking at who their resources are and then you're off to the races.
The rabbit hole.
Exactly. And I do love me a rabbit hole. And so I remember very definitively being on my dock and it felt very empowering and actually really fun to say, oh, well, I need a plan. And I mean, that really was the best thing that I ever did for my business, was to spend days on my dock in the summer while the kids were, you know, swimming around me. And people like my siblings and my partner were like bringing me beer to like write a strategic plan. And I was like, wait a second, I actually kind of know what I'm doing. I just didn't know I needed to put it in this format. And then when a question from the strategic plan would be like, tell me about product development, I'd be like, oh, I don't know what my next products should be. And then you'd go down that rabbit hole. And then you'd talk about like, what operations do you need to have to make, you know, your business function more efficiently? I'm like, gee, I don't know. And so that summer to solve those problems, to build that plan, just took things off. So again, I know I'm not answering your question by saying it wasn't that hard, because I felt that that was the catalyst, which is actually why I offer a VIP day for the people that I coach, because it truly completely changed my business. And since then, now every question and every plan and every challenge that needs to be solved in the business is on paper. And so I just kind of go through it every day, showing up, knowing, like it's very proactive. It's not reactive anymore.
So you had been running a successful pediatric private practice for many years. You made that switch, that transition to really kind of become the CEO and the less of that clinician role where you're providing the direct client care and all of mm-hmm. that. And I know that you have mentioned when we've been chatting that you also work with other OT entrepreneurs through coaching and that type of stuff. So when did you realize that your passion was not just for running your own business and running your own practice, but in also consulting with other business owners to help them level up their businesses?
It came in sideways. I had no idea that this was something that I was going to be doing. I hired a business coach, Melissa LaPointe. Melissa was the very first person that was an OT that was offering services to help therapists, and her niche was building digital products. And I, again, because I sat down and did the strategic plan, I was like, you know, how can we change this time for money transaction that we're in for time for expertise? And how can we increase the reach of Spring OT digitally? Because we're a bricks and mortar clinic, what else can we do? And I had just reacted to the audience requests that we had, our client requests. I was getting a lot of notes from people all over the world. But I remember in particular, there was a teacher in Kentucky who just kept writing to me about the toileting blogs that we had done and the Pinterest board that we had. And she was like, can you please teach me how, as a teacher, I can help toilet train this kid with autism? And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. We tried to start running a toileting program that wasn't time for money, in terms of like 1 hour equals $150 an hour or whatever. And then I thought, well, let's try to take that online. So that's what I approached Melissa with. And through that work, I wound up morphing. I think I started with her in July, and about 3 months later, I morphed my digital offer into OT Entrepreneur Coach. And I had been doing that informally for a really long time. I had, through my travels, speech therapists that I worked with and psychologists that I worked with and massage therapists that I know. I'm trying to think of somebody else. Oh, and then of course I have like my OT besties that are my friends from years gone by that have companies, and we all were talking about it, and I was doing it informally, and I would get paid in lunches a lot. And then it occurred to me, as I spent more time in this group, actually, and I realized how much I loved being with the other OTs, that that was really where my passion was. And it was a very surprising change for me, and I was really nervous about it. And I truly thought that there was no way that it would have that same kind of endorphin boost that working with face-to-face families and kids would have. And it wound up very much doing it. So to summarize, I knew somewhere on the strategic plan for Spring OT, we were going to expand our products and services into something digital. Then it morphed into, well, I can have Spring Occupational Therapy Corporation and have like a bricks and mortar and do this coaching business. And that's the path that I was on. I was bringing up my number two. I was going to be the CEO kind of off campus while my number two ran the Bricks and Mortar show, while I was digging deep into the online coaching and consulting before Corona. That's where we were at.
Yeah, right. and then
ta-da!
Yeah, and then life happened there and everything shifted into more digital and lots of pivoting with businesses and companies and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted to kind of go back to a point that you made previously, that when you were starting out building your private practice, there weren't a lot of resources for OT entrepreneurs out there.
Not at all. No. In fact, and oftentimes, and I know it sounds, please take this with, you know, the humility I'm trying to say with it. Like, I wished there was a me.
Yeah.
Like, I wished there was you. I wished there was a Melissa. I wish there was a Laura. And my best friend, Kelly Casey Bynes, she and I met all the time to talk business. And it's really another one of those like fist on the table moments. Like, there's got to be a better way. And in fact, I have quite a few people that come to me now and say, you're really limiting yourself by being with OTs. OTs will never pay you. And the market is so much bigger. And, you know, you should really be doing this for physicians and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. To which I say, no, thank you. Because have you not heard of niching down?
Yep, exactly.
I'm like, dude, you don't know what you're talking about. And then the second thing I say is, well, I love my OTs. I left OT for a long time. I found it again. And part of my mission is to leave a legacy of OTs leading OTs in this field.
I love that. And I think there's so much that we can learn from professionals and people outside of OT when it comes to business, right? There are podcasts, there are books, there are a million different resources. And there's so many things that are amazing about that. But there is a different perspective. There's a different lens when you are working with, learning from, and really collaborating with other OTs that want to either start a company or are in the midst of starting their own company and really kind of on their entrepreneurial journey. And there is just something special and kind of magical about that, where I'm not discrediting people that are outside of it, but really having that niche of being an OT, being an entrepreneur. And I feel the same way. Like when I first started, there weren't a lot of resources. And definitely over maybe the last year, two years, something like that.
Yeah, I would say that exact same timeline.
Yeah, it's been incredible to see the amount of people that are stepping forward and are out there putting themselves out there, putting their resources out there to inspire, to connect, to help other OTs along the same journey. So, A, I am so glad that you're here, your voice is here, and you're sharing this story about it, because I think your journey, your story has been so similar to at least mine, and I'm sure some other people as well. And it's one of those things that you can learn so much from hearing about other people's experiences and also learn from their mistakes. So then you don't have to make the same mistakes. And I want to know, in working with your coaching clients, what do you think is the hardest thing for them to overcome when they are on their entrepreneurial journey?
I would say that most of the people that I either coach formally or I speak to through social or through discovery calls, what they think is their biggest challenge is the tech and the planning. They come and they say, oh, I just could never do that because I don't understand the tech, or I could never grow because I don't understand the operations, or because I'm not a systems person. I don't know what's out there. I have a lot of clients that say, well, I don't know what I don't know.
Yep.
And so that's more of the process tech side, and that's easily learned. I would say that the biggest challenge that I see is making that mental shift from clinician to CEO. I hear repeatedly people feel guilty when they start to leave behind the clinician role. I typically get clients that are not just solopreneurs, although some are, maybe they've started with a VA. I also get quite a few people that have business partners or bigger teams. I have a few people right now that I'm coaching who have 20 and 30 people on their teams. And I really think it's very, very difficult when in your heart of hearts, you start as that pie baker, or you start as that guy that fixes mufflers, or the roofer, or the therapist. Why would you give up what you love and what you do so well for something that you have no idea how to do? And that is a very, very difficult thing. I think people don't know how to do it. And I also think they're really scared to do it.
Yeah. I agree. I think that mindset piece is incredibly hard. And we kind of were touching on this topic at the very beginning of the episode, in kind of these internal, call them internal, there could be some external hurdles as well that we have to overcome. And it's interesting, as you were talking, I was sitting there and I was like, yeah, I feel like even with myself and other entrepreneurs that I talk to, the problem, quote unquote, the problem, the issues typically aren't what the actual issue really is. Like, mm-hmm. That's what people are kind of using as a crutch of like, oh, well, I can't do that because I don't understand the tech, like you were saying, or I don't know enough about X, Y, and Z. When it really is, okay, maybe you don't know that information, but it's the mindset that you have to be like, okay, I don't know, but let's go learn. Or let me reach out to somebody that has done this before. Let me utilize my resources in order to really kind of cross that bridge. And it's that mindset piece, kind of tying back into what I was saying about, we're not taught this in OT school. Mm-hmm. We're taught how to work with clients. We're not taught the marketing aspect and the legal aspect and the financial aspect and all these other hats that we have to wear as OT entrepreneurs. So I completely agree with you. I think the mindset is often overlooked until somebody brings it to your attention. Or you're like reading a book or a podcast or something, and it's like talking about mindset, and you're like, oh, dang, I need to work on my mindset.
Darn it. Or what I get a lot is like, okay, I've done a lot of mindset work. So what I really need you to help me with, Trish, is figuring out how to bring a digital product to the marketplace. And I go, great. And then we start with the tools. And then surely enough, the third or the fourth session in, they're like, I'm like, how did it go getting all that done? They're like, ooh. So the other thing that happens, I believe, is like OTs are taught, and I think to their detriment as entrepreneurs, that we can do it all. So I think the breadth of the profession does not help us when we're trying to be the CEO, because really the CEO has to say a whole lot of no's, like a mm-hmm. whole lot of no's. And as an OT, I literally remember a clinician wanted to refer a kid to me maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And she was like, he's coming out of the lockdown unit at the Children's. He has schizophrenia. He has autism. Will you take him? And I said, I don't know what to do with this kid. And she goes, nobody knows what to do with this kid. And I said, oh, well, great. If nobody knows what to do, I can fail with the best of them. Like, well, I'll try that. So that works great clinically. It doesn't work entrepreneurially, in my opinion. You can say yes to opportunities, but then you have to say no to a whole lot as you're trying to be the CEO. So we are so used to context switching, like, hey, I'm going to see the, 11-year-old who just got out of a lockdown unit and, has autism and schizophrenia. And the next time I'm going to do a parent consult on a 3-year-old with behavior issues. And so, blah, like that's all in a day.
Yeah.
And, if you're used to that context switching all the time under your umbrella, then you get into that again with being the entrepreneur business owner piece, and it doesn't work. The other thing that happens is, as you know, as experts in adult learning and neurobiology, the brain doesn't like change. And we are constantly demanding change of ourselves as a CEO, or owning that CEO piece of our lives. And when you hit like a stressful week, what are you going to do, Sarah? You're going to slide back into stasis.
Yep.
And you're going to say, oh, sure, I'll see Johnny. Fantastic. I can fit Johnny in, when you know you have to write your email marketing campaign, or you've promised your coach that you will like spend 55% on deliverables and the other percent of the time on CEOing, if we make it a verb. And this happens all the time with all of us, because we all live incredibly stressful lives as 21st century people, and it's a stressful career, I believe. So what am I going to do? It's really hard to say, when the phone rings and I'm sweating because I don't want to write a nurture sequence for, I don't know, whatever marketing campaign I'm doing, because that's harder than saying hi to Mrs. Smith, who calls me and she's like, it's an ideal client. He's 5. I love 5-year-old quirky boys. And sensory processing, fine motor, just needs a little bit of a boost, and they live around the corner, right?
Yep.
And this private pay, and they'll pay your rates. And you're like, oh, I want to see him. So those are the two biggest hurdles that I see for the people that are growing their OT businesses.
I literally have been saying that exact same thing for the past, I don't even know, probably a couple of months, where I know what I need to do to get to the next step in my business life, but it's so much easier just to revert back and continue doing the things that you're solid in and the things that you're comfortable in. the things that you really don't have to use all that mental energy for. So like, as you're saying that, I'm like, Trish is talking to me right now.
Good. I'm so glad. Well, and so then like, and then take this in context. Here's your mindset lesson today, people. Lean in. Listen to Aunt Trish.
She's talking to me, but.
Listen to Aunt Trish, people. Let your Aunt Trish help you out today, right now. So here's the thing. If you understand load and you understand stress, which again, as therapists, we do, pace yourself. Especially now. So everybody, it's almost cliche now to be like, oh yeah, so now we're in a global pandemic. And I have to remind myself constantly. There's some days I show up and do pretty great. Like yesterday, Sarah, I was like in a skirt in my own gosh darn house. Okay. Yeah. And I had on shoes and I was like, I put on some like hair spray.
Who are you?
I know, right? I was like, who am I? And today I'm in pajamas, but I have on shoes and a really nice scarf with my pajamas. So like every day my load shifts because of my own stress levels. And I just have to be a hawk and monitor what my stress levels are like and what my load is like, because I'm trying to learn new skills in a stressful world at a very stressful time in my stressful life, quite frankly. So remember that. Remember that if you feel fried and you feel like it's too hard and you can't do it, there's like a stress response reason for that, and give yourself a break.
I'm like legit, like there are like tears in my eyes right now. Cause I'm like, yeah, I feel that with the weight of the world, with the weight of our personal lives and everything that we have going on outside of our clinical / entrepreneurial business minds and lives. Like that's so just like struck a chord. Cause I'm like,
good.
There are days where I'm like, if I can get out of bed and eat breakfast and make it through the day, that's a good day. And then there are other days that like I'm crushing it and I'm knocking out task after task and I'm doing the hard things, but it ebbs and flows. And really embracing both, embracing the days where you are not at the top of your game and allowing that space, but then also embracing the days that you're like, yeah, my energy's good, I got my motivation, like I'm in the flow right here. So thank you for sharing that because that's what I needed to hear. And
I'm glad.
I wanted to skip back to a point that you made just a couple minutes ago. And I started to kind of draw this parallel between actually something you mentioned towards the beginning of the episode and then something that you just mentioned. And it's interesting because I felt the same way when I was kind of going about my entrepreneurial journey. But in the beginning, you said something about saying yes and saying yes to a lot of things that kind of came your way that opened doors. And I think when we are first starting out, we have to say yes to open up these opportunities to see where we can even go. Saying yes to clients, saying yes to opportunities, saying yes to a bunch of things that come our way. But the kicker, and really, I think kind of making that mindset shift, making that shift into the CEO is starting to say no, because it's easy to say yes and work ourselves to the bone and really, I mean, book up every single hour to things that we can do and we can get reimbursed for and all this kind of stuff. But the power to be able to sit back and be like, no, I can't do that. I shouldn't do that. I don't want to do that. Or maybe I kind of want to do it, but it's not a hell yes. It's kind of like it's a maybe. And I think there's a power in owning that no to be able to then focus on what it is that you need to do. So I kind of wanted to bring that up because I think it is a really, really important point of like, yes, you have to say yes in the beginning, but as you get into what it is that you want to be doing and finding your ideal client and your ideal mission and vision and all that kind of stuff, the no actually becomes more important than the yes.
Well, in a way of reframing it, and I'm not splitting hairs, but perhaps people will appreciate this reframe if they don't like that sound of the no and it sounds really negative, is, you know, you actually are saying yes, but you have to clear space to keep saying yes.
Yep.
And so, you know, again, the strategic plan piece, which just, as I say, was so seminal in my business life, it reminded me that I had so many more yeses for 2021 and 2022 and 2024 that those are my yeses now. My yeses in the olden days were more like, you know, when I had a school called, this is totally a true story. I'm sure all of us have them. A school called and they were like, hey, we've heard of you. And I'm in a room by myself, literally, like with my computer where I tap out, you know, invoices with my two index fingers on Word. And they were like, hey, we have this, we're a school, we're a private school, and we're really interested in hiring you. And we've got like 12 kids. And do you think? And I said, oh, absolutely. And I hung up the phone and I was like looking around my walls, like my bare walls, going, how exactly is that going to work? But I was saying yes to attracting more clients and getting more clients. That was my big yes in the beginning, right? And now I don't have that same need. So I'm just saying yes to other things. And now that you are even busier, you need to say no to something to get to that those other yeses.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I feel like every time you say no, it's opening up yeses to other things that could potentially be on your radar or on the table, but they might not even be on the table yet. So
exactly.
Yeah, reframe all you want, because I love that. So I'm sure you have a ton that could be said for this next question, but how about we go with one, or maybe top two or three or something like that?
Okay.
What advice would you have for an entrepreneur that's listening to this right now who has a private practice, has some sort of OT business, but they feel stuck and they don't know what to do and they want to take their business to the next level? What would you say to them?
I love this question, Sarah. I have spent a lot of time thinking about this question, so let me see if I can pull it together. I would say the very first thing you need to do is have a vision. And again, I am a classic example of, I just put my head down, I built a clinic where I wanted to work, and I built a clinic where I wanted my clients to be seen. And it was all clinical based. And that vision really just resonated deep inside me. And I had some marketing words for it. And I certainly had a lot of testimonials, and I certainly listened to what kids and parents were saying. And I did not sit down to write any of that down. And again, this seems like busy work. Maybe some of the things I'm going to say aren't very sexy, and that's okay. They don't have to be, because they are life-changing, business-changing. So there is a whole gosh darn reason that you need a vision. You need goals. So again, because you and I speak the language of pediatrics, it literally boggles my mind that I got so far in business and had not written an IEP for my own gosh darn business. Like it truly is hilarious when I think about it. And I would say 90% of the people that come to me for coaching haven't done it either, which is again, another reason why I've structured an entire VIP day around strategic planning, because it was easily the number one thing I did in my business. There's freebies out there. You can like DM me if you want. I'll happily give you some prompt questions. There's templates galore. But of course, you can always work with me in a VIP day capacity. And by the end, we will literally have your roadmap. So people also come to me and they're like, I get really flustered and I know I'm the CEO and I take all this time, but I don't know what I should be working on. And I still put out fires. And it truly, truly, truly gives you a roadmap and changes you from being reactive to proactive. Imagine if you could show up every day at work and you actually knew what you were going to be working on. Like that's as important as it got for me in terms of what I needed to do to move that needle, and then how to plan that information and put it out in like a productivity system. So I would say number one is you have to have a vision and you have to have goals, aka a strategic plan.
Amen.
Okay, great. The second I feel is you need data. You need to know the variables that you have in your company. You need to know what you're measuring in your company. And so I'm going to talk about cash in a minute, but in terms of numbers and data, you need things that you can measure. So this is a biggie. Do your employees have any idea what they're working towards? And I don't just mean like you need to see 37 kids a week. Do they know how they impact the growth of the company? Do you know what you want the growth of your company to be? Do you know what your conversion rate is? Do you know how many sales you're getting a week? Do you know, not social media vanity metrics, but do you know how many people interact with you on social media? Do you know if people buy from you on social media? How many referrals are you getting? You know, what are the revenue goals that you have that month? And did you actually meet them? So there's a brilliant book called Traction, and that has everything that you want to know and more about different variables that you can measure in your business. They have something called a scorecard. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of the book. I have not read it yet.
Okay.
So
I'm like geeking out on it. I got it at the library twice and then finally was like, ugh, just, you know, buy this darn thing. And I literally read the thing cover to cover and I was like, oh. and then have a time to sit down. And every week, I want you to have a CEO time that is on your calendar that you don't change, where you go over these scorecard. If anybody's interested, I actually built a freebie around this, around the, you know, top tips for being a CEO, but I also include a CEO report in there. And that's something that I came up with on my own. So there's the scorecard that you can learn from Traction, but there's also a CEO report that's narrative based. And I fill it out every week. And I, you know, it has lists of like, what were your wins this week? What are your plans for this week? What did you accomplish? What are the challenges? And it has the word for the year. So data, 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 like what got you here is not going to get you there, is a James Wedmore-ism. And how can you know where to get to if you don't have a strategic plan and you don't even know the data in your business? So I don't know how you want to do this. Maybe I can link to the freebie in the notes or something, Sarah. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Okay. And the last thing I will say is cash. We're back to the numbers. Again, my gosh, this is the least sexy answer on the planet. A strategic plan, data, and cash. Who am I? I actually have become a Harvard MBA grad.
I love you for it.
Without knowing it. And I wish the answer, like, believe me, I'd like to have a butterfly unicorn answer, but these build butterflies and unicorns. And you can tell in my voice, like, I'm not a quants girl. Like, I am like a Cancer / Leo Enneagram 2. Like, I'm as touchy-feel as they get. But these are the things that help people get unstuck, bar none. So do you know how to increase the cash in your business? And I just recorded a podcast episode on this because, again, so many OTs come to me and they're like, well, I'll hire somebody. So that's volume. And that's just one of the ways that you can increase the cash in your business. People get really stuck when they are not paying themselves enough because they're fried and they don't really understand the numbers and they just keep doing what they're doing, which is why I titled my podcast OTs Get Paid, because I cannot tell you the number of people that have said, I don't want to be selfish, but I'm fried and I just wish I could contribute more. I work so hard. I have so many degrees. Why am I not getting paid more? And in order to get paid more, we need to get really clear on what the cash in our company is, the revenue. So volume, seeing more kids will just fry you out. And hiring a few people to see more kids is great, but it's only one way. Do you know how to lower your operations costs? Do you know how to increase your price? And do you know how to get cash back faster into your clinic? Pricing is a huge, huge, huge one that lots of people call me and want consultations on. All of that is to say, and I'll be like, I'll just put myself out there. Like if working on these allows you to pay your team really well and allow you to get paid really well, you're going to get a lot less stuck.
Yeah. I just feel like anybody that's listening, just feel free. You can pause and rewind.
It was a lot.
I don't even know, 5 to 10 minutes, whatever Trish was just saying, and listen again, because there is so much good stuff in there. And I feel like I'm going to have to go back and listen, because I was like, yes. 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 Even see, but the whole time I was just like nodding my head. I was like, yeah. So feel free, repeat, listen.
Yeah. And I mean, this is an example of not needing an MBA. And this is an example of having gone through it myself and then doing the research out and bringing it to OTs, because OTs want to learn from other OTs. So I do have podcast episodes on this. I do have VIP days on this. I have freebies on this. I'm sure at the end we can talk about how to reach me, but I'm trying to get more content out into the world and it's all over my social, et cetera. And of course, you know, we can work together in a paid capacity, but there is a lot of ways to access this stuff for free. But this is a great example. Thank you for saying that it's so helpful. But I got here as a solopreneur too, as a silopreneur as well. Like we all live in our bubbles. I love that word silopreneur because I think it just—
Yeah, I do too.
Right? Yeah. It's just this like mental image of all of us just like working on our own in our little spheres, and the ability to connect now through podcasts and through different Facebook groups, et cetera. It's amazing. And I don't want you guys, again, I don't want you guys to sit back and think like, oh, well, Trish clearly was taking night classes in accounting. Like that's not it. These resources are out there for you too.
So perfect segue here, because this was exactly what I was going to ask next. So I know you've mentioned the E-Myth, you've mentioned Traction, you've mentioned a couple other people and like other podcasts, but resources. What other resources do you recommend? Books, podcasts? You know, I'm a podcast junkie, so of course I always throw that in there, but anything kind of rapid fire that comes to your mind that you're like, yeah, just go take a read, take a listen to this.
Absolutely. I have so many business podcasts on my phone. So I love Biz Chicks podcast with Natalie Ekdahl. I think her stuff is amazing. She has an amazing free episode on strategic planning, which actually really was the foundation of how I taught myself. The second is a podcast called System Saved Me by Jordan Gill. She is like your productivity operations guru podcaster. I dabble in James Wedmore's podcast. I listen to Tyler McCall's podcast at times. I go in and out of the Brooke Castillo Life Coach School podcast. Amy Porterfield, kind of more on digital marketing. Those are kind of the biggies that come to mind. You have turned me on to podcasts about podcasts.
Yes. Mission accomplished.
I know, totally. And so I've been listening to School of Podcasting.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
And one of the last episodes, I've only listened to a few. The last episode was like basically everything you need to know about podcasting, which was pretty good because I've been looking at that for a long time as I'm building my own. And I was like, ooh, check, 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 check. So it was very validating, but there were also like really great nuggets in there. And then I have to shout out to the OT podcasters in our sphere. So yours, of course, Laura Park Figueroa's Mind Your OT Business. So many gems in there. I've just started listening to Rian and Crisp's, and you know, Melissa's is coming up, and then hopefully mine can be one on somebody's rotations. So those are the podcasts. Books on my shelf are Good to Great by Jim Collins. The Michael Port books about being booked solid. Those are amazing. Donald Miller's Story Brand. I have a book on my desk right now called The One Thing, which I'm getting through. The Big Leap was huge. I loved The Big Leap. Yeah, those are the ones that I loved and I tend to go back to again and again.
Perfect. I'm like literally trying to like write these all down as you're saying them. Definitely miss some, but I will make sure that anything that you have mentioned in the episode so far is linked in the show notes. So if anybody wants to go check out any of the resources or anything that you have talked about, it will be there. And if people want to connect with you, they want to ask you questions, they want to learn more from you, where can they find you?
You can find me in a few different places. So as I've mentioned, I have a podcast out called OTs Get Paid. We have a Facebook group associated with that. You can find us there. We also have an Instagram account. You can find me on social media. Trish Williams Consulting is Instagram and Facebook. And those are really the easiest. I'll also take this opportunity to invite you, if you're interested, to a summit that I co-host with Laura Park Figueroa called the OT Entrepreneur Summit. Sarah, you spoke at it last year and we're doing it again, May 2021.
It's amazing.
Thank you. We have a website for that. So if you want to go www.otentrepreneursummit.com, you can get on the list, and the wait list is like, we will just give you emails of when registration is happening.
Awesome. Oh, I'm so excited. I loved it last year and I am really looking forward to next year as well. So that brings me to my last question, Trish. Are you ready for this?
I am.
All right. We have had a lot of words, a lot of language that we have shared about occupational therapy, entrepreneurship. But if you only had one word, you were only given one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
So I'm going to preface my answer.
You only get one. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah, no, I know that. And I will. But I will say my sister, and I almost named my podcast this. My sister says, why would Trish use 10 words when 50 will do?
500.
500 will do. I'm not known for being succinct. Honestly, without any thought to it, the number one thing that comes to me is connection.
I love it.
And what I mean by that is there is no role, there is no change of that role without connection.
In life, in business, in OT, yep. I'm just like, mic drop. All right. I love that word. And definitely, it's one of those words that's very important to my mission, my vision, and my business and all that kind of stuff. So thank you, Trish, for coming on the show, sharing your journey, sharing your wins, sharing your challenges, and sharing so much of this wonderful OT entrepreneurship advice that is so needed within our field right now. And yeah, I appreciate you doing this from the bottom of my heart. So thank you.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity, Sarah. Keep growing those OT podcasts for us, okay?
I will.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you like what you hear, here are three easy ways you can help support the show. One, head over to otforlife.com to find out more about any resources discussed on the show. Remember, that's OT, the number 4, LYFE.com. 2, share the podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 3, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. And while you're there, be sure to leave a review saying how much you love the show. Thanks again. I'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
And that's actually where your marketing and sales starts, but that's not the answer to your question.
What's the word I'm looking for?
And then the next hour I'm going to do like constraint, you know, I'm forgetting that acronym. What is it, Sarah? CIMT, constraint induced movement therapy. Yeah.
Yes.
Additionally, I think that, just a second, I lost my train of thought. Oh, I really did lose my train of thought. Hold on, Sarah. Let me just think.
No, that's okay. You were just saying something about like the context.
I know
switching.
I had a second thought on that.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me think. Okay. OT entrepreneur, OT context switching. Now I know what I want to say.
I'm all about setting like intentions and picking a word for the year ahead. And being right now, we are actually recording in middle of December. I still have not figured out my word for next year, but you've got my brain thinking. I've got a couple things floating around here. So when I get it, I'll let you know what that word's going to be.
What was it last year? What was it 2020?
You know what? I like can't even remember. Like so many things. Yeah, that's 2020 for you.
I love it.
So many things happened that I was thinking about it like maybe a week or two ago. And I'm like, what was my word for this year? Like I can't. Like I can remember my word from like 3 years ago.
It's like remembering your childhood phone number.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Let me just write this down, Sarah. Hold on.
Yep. I know. I like asking very kind of open-ended questions because I want to see where people's brains go. So I'm not
totally
leading you anywhere with that.
No. I'm going to write this down again. Oh my gosh, my old self. Okay. So guys, in Ontario, when I was a kid, we had grade 13 and I literally passed grade 13 math by the skin of my chinny chin chin. Like it's hilarious that I teach in a master's of science program and I like barely got through math. And so talk about a mindset. It wasn't about money, really. It was about math and numbers mindset. Like my bookkeeper would laugh at me and she'd be like, you're literally having a panic attack right now. I'm like, I don't understand. Like I just flip out when I see numbers. I'm the kind of person that, I shouldn't maybe say this. I'm not as bad as I used to be, but even 5 years ago, I'd be the kind of person that like, you know, when you get change at a store, like I wouldn't even count it. I'd just be like, okay, thanks a lot. Like, because I'm like, I don't know, it's right, it's wrong. I don't know. Don't make me do math. And here I am, like now the data girl. And it's not a book that like looks like it's relatable, like it's black and neon orange, and it's written by a guy named Gino. And I'm like, oh, this is so bro-y. Like it doesn't relate to me at all. And it's like my last question is the word for your year is, and for me 2020 was calm. Are you living this out? And most of the time it's like, no.
I was gonna say that's an interesting word choice for this year, now that we know how it's panned out.
Get into my DMs. My teens hate it when I say that, by the way. Like they hate it so much because they're like, Mom, you sound like you're trying to date randos. I'm like, slide into my DMs. They're like, no.
Is that not what the cool kids say these days?
No. And you know what cool moms don't do? Cool moms don't do reels, which I have just started doing for business. And my children are dying. And I am so happy about that.